Chris, how you been, sir?
Bill, I'm doing well. Hope you're doing well.
We were talking about something yesterday, and I wanted to get your expertise on this. We were talking about just some what-ifs. In the 80s, around 86-ish, Steve Spurrier, who had been with the Tampa Bay Bandits, interviews at LSU, and he doesn't even get to the second round of interviews. Now, let me ask you, was that going to be who succeeded Bill Arnsberger? Is that the time this went on?
Yeah. What happened was you had a situation where at the time in that tenure, Bob Broadhead was the athletic director and hired Bill Arnsberger. Broadhead got into some trouble and was let go. So James Wharton was the chancellor and was kind of running things. And Bill Arnsberger was in the process of trying to, and I was on the staff then, so I remember this like yesterday. Bill was trying to get the Florida athletic director job, which he got. And he was very close with the chancellor, and the chancellor kind of trusted him because obviously Broadhead had been ushered out. And he recommended highly his assistant, Mike Archer. And so you didn't have an athletic director. You didn't have a real search. I tell you who else interviewed for the job, Mike Shanahan. Obviously, background in the NFL, but had a lot of background at Florida.
Right.
And neither one of those guys, neither Steve or, was all that interested in it. There was some communication, not very much, by some people with Bobby Bowden, who wasn't interested in moving at the time. Bobby Bowden wanted the job at LSU back when they hired Bo Ryan, when Charlie McClendon was moving out. Now, Bobby was heading – he hadn't done anything at Florida State yet. He was just there. But there was some real interest in that job by Bobby. And, of course, we know the Alabama job is the one that Bobby Bowden really wanted. But anyway, I don't want to get off on a tangent. I tend to do that too much, way too much for you. But, yes, it was pretty much going to be a Mike Archer ramrod situation. They weren't going to pay a ton of money. And – they didn't have any real leadership. The chancellor there was making the call, and he was going to go with what Bill Arnsberger recommended, which was not necessarily the brightest thing to go. So in his, the guys making the decision didn't know what Steve Spurrier was or was going to be, I work for Mike like Mike, but clearly Mike wasn't ready for that job, but no, yeah, that's how it played out. There were a few other candidates, but those were the two most notable, Shanahan and Archer, that had a real interest. And Steve always had an axe to grind. He always has a if Steve's not in a good mood, he'll put a rock in his shoe to get himself in a bad mood. He never liked LSU because of it, and just kind of like he always held a grudge against everybody, right?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, Spurrier holds a grudge. Probably he's probably one of the best ever at holding a grudge. What's interesting, though, Chris, Arnsberger, who wanted the Florida AD job, gets it, and then he hires Spurrier. Some people think that Jeremy Foley gets credit. Jeremy Foley did not hire Spurrier. Arnsberger did.
Correct. In fact, I remember when that went down. I mean, that was like a he did – he hired him, but that was kind of a, you know, and I realized that the forecasting the success at Florida seemed like a given, but Steve had done unbelievable things at Duke. Different ACC, but when you win an ACC championship with Anthony Dilwig at quarterback and the job, he certainly had experience in the USFL, and being a Florida guy, he was very vocal, you know, that he wanted the job. So, listen, Bill hired him, but it wasn't like a real difficult hire, if you know what I mean. It's not like,
right,
well, you went out on the limb there. Because while he wasn't Steve, you know, at that time, wasn't Steve Spurrier, the Florida Gator successful head coach, it was a pretty easy, you know, hire there. I mean, it's a lot easier than Georgia hiring Kirby or, you know, I mean, probably along the lines of, you know, Nebraska hiring Scott Frost. I mean, that was kind of a, He was one of their guys. He was a successful head coach at a smaller school. You know, it was a pretty obvious hire for Bill to make. But it was Bill, not Jeremy Foley, correct.
And back to LSU. Archer, early on, he inherited Tommy Hodson, so there was a little bit of a run there, and then it eroded, right?
Well, you know, we were all there, and Mike was there. He was very involved and was the key guy. He was the defensive coordinator, and he was a key guy recruiting a lot of those guys. So the Tommy Hodson, the Wendell Davis, so he inherited him, but he was on the staff in recruiting him. So, listen, the biggest issue that Mike had, and quite frankly, Mike wasn't a great recruiter, and LSU wasn't LSU. There was no money being spent. The facilities were awful. And when I tell you that we had the worst facilities in the SEC, I've been to all of them at that time. And in the late 80s when Mike had the job, Vanderbilt, the two Mississippi schools, Kentucky, everybody had better facilities than us. I mean, and I'm not talking about the stadium. Tiger Stadium was great. But our offices were in the stadium, and there were three coaches to an office. I mean, it just, you know, there was just, it was just awful. I mean, you didn't have, you had to, the weight room was so small, you couldn't have team workouts. You had to have position workouts. So it was a different world and a different time, and it seems like yesterday to me, but it is a world of difference in what you have today from recruiting. And it was different, and recruiting was tougher. And, you know, other schools around the country were coming in the state, and quite frankly, other facilities were a lot better, and it hurt us in a big-time way. And Mike wasn't a great recruiter, and there were a couple of good recruiters on the staff. Pete Jenkins was very good. But quite frankly, it was a staff of – I don't want to mention any names. Those guys are my friends, but – you know, I can see them now. None of them worked hard at recruiting. And, in fact, I'll say it, recruiting kind of fell to me and Sam Nader. We basically had to do all the legwork. And when you're not the position coach, you're not the coordinators, you're not the head coaches, we had to basically spoon-feed the assistants on who to recruit, how to recruit, and that was very tough to do. And I thought we did a good job with what we had, but the program slipped because recruiting was not as good, and that's how a good program can slip if you don't have the right people that put the emphasis on recruiting. And I always felt like even back then that LSU had a lot more potential. The next head coach, the next athletic director was hired eventually after Mike was promoted, was Joe Dean, who I loved, but Joe Dean was as he. When he walked, he squeaked. Now, again, Bob Broadhead was a very liberal spender. So when Joe Dean was hired, it was, you need to cut corners. And well, you had Bob Broadhead was spending, at that time, $900,000 a year on the track program, which I can't tell you how much money that was back in the mid-'80s. And he was buying, you know, championships and track and, you know, giving Skip Bertman all types of money. And then, you know, it's like we were fighting for money in football. Well, Joe was a very, very tight guy, and he had to pull the reins in. And so, I mean, it was like you couldn't get a computer at that time. You know, it was just very, very difficult to do things. And I know people say, what? Are you kidding me? You know, the mid-'80s, late-'80s, yeah, it was we did things on a shoestring budget at that time. It was a different world. We didn't have the big-time money. Now it's a completely different world. But and then that was a problem, and obviously they made a disastrous hire. Joe Dean is good friends with Gil Brandt. Gil, God bless him, is just, you know, totally clueless, recommended that he hired Curly Hallman. That was a disaster hire. You can talk about who the great coaches are. There's no question the worst coach ever in LSU history was Curly Hallman. And then that led to, we talked about it before, they were going to hire Pat Sullivan from TCU. That fell apart at the last minute. And then they hired DiNardo. And then obviously things changed when they hired Saban. And, you know, and my involvement there is kind of documented. But anyway, you know, that's kind of how it played out. But at that point in history, it was Mike Archer. But everybody says, oh, how could you do that? Well, guess what? Nobody else was hiring Mike Shanahan or Steve Spurrier then also either. You know, and so it took a few years later and success at Duke later for obviously Florida to do it. But it seems like an obvious decision. It wasn't so obvious then. I always loved the hindsight 2020 view, although you know, certainly Steve was very, very good. I don't know that he would have been long for LSU, because if he'd had success at LSU, he would have left for Florida in a second, because that was home to him.
Chris, you got a couple of minutes on the other side?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, and we will absolutely let you know how you can get his service, LandryFootball.com, and all the information that comes with it. We'll get the break here. Omni Nashville Hotel.
Gives you a wide latitude on topics because Bill King isn't afraid of your telephonic interaction.
Omni Nashville Hotel, we're going to be in that area tomorrow morning. Southern Steak and Oyster will be our location. So come on by if you happen to be in the area. Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. I was going to ask you, and we've got time for rumors that might not develop, but Zach Smith said the other day that he believes that Urban Meyer will take the Southern Cal job. Obviously, we don't know if he'll ever coach again or not. We just don't know. But the timing would be pretty good, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, certainly in terms of the profile job and sitting out and having his choice, you know, from Urban's standpoint, yes. I think where people kind of get into it, and listen, I get it, Urban's got a reputation that, you know, people think that he's lying about everything, and, you know, he's had situations where he hasn't been very truthful. But the reality is the guy really can't coach right now from a medical standpoint. I don't know. I don't know enough. I just know what I've been told about his medical situation. I don't know if that's going to clear up or you know, he'll feel better in a year. I can tell you that the people that think that there's this plan that this is going to happen and all that, you know, a lot of people guess, and if they guess right, they think they know. I mean, USC is a premier job. Could I see it happening? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen? No. I don't know that USC is going to go in that direction because they do things differently. And I don't know that's something that Urban, I think that would be something that Urban might consider from a football standpoint, but I don't know if health-wise he can. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of conjecture that you put it together and say, I could see that happening, but I could see a lot of things happening, and 95% of them never happen because of timing. So the timing may work out, but it may not work out either. You know, there's an opening. What if he really might like to go there, but physically he can't? Well, then the timing may be a year too soon. I mean, you don't know. I mean, so when you get into medical situations and issues like that, this is not a case of burnout and he's going to sit out a year. And, you know, this is something that apparently is real. And so I don't know how medically this is going to, you know, play out.
Do you believe this is the year that Michigan finally gets something done that is applauded?
I think there's a lot of potential for it to be. I think that they have a chance, and I mentioned several weeks ago that one of the more intriguing storylines is what is this offense going to look like and what it's going to look like for the entire year. I think that is that's going to answer your question. Yes or no. I mean, it's going to come down to that. I think that it has every chance. It shapes up because Urban's gone, you know, new head coach, Ohio State's losing key guys. Ohio State's still got the better talent. But I would say that the pressure's mounting towards some big wins. got to win some big games, and there's no bigger game for Michigan than Ohio State. So I don't know if it's going to happen. I would say that it's the best chance, and we're just going to have to see how they develop through the course of the year.
Soul Street Coffee has a question. And again, his site, soulstreetcoffee.com. Delicious coffee. Chris, he says, what about Jimbo as a coach? He quotes, or he mentions that Jameis Winston, when he was there, obviously they won a natty. But he said, without Jameis, Jimbo averages 3 losses per season. This year they have to play Clemson. He's talking about the Aggies. Auburn, LSU, Georgia, and Alabama, which could lead to a 1-4 record in this 5-game stretch. So I know you like Jimbo. What do you think about that?
Well, Clemson, Auburn, LSU, Georgia, Alabama, all 5 of those teams have better talent than A&M. So I'd say they can go 0-5. I don't know if they will. They beat LSU last year. I know LSU kind of looks at it with bad calls. Well, that's true, but LSU had, I think, you know, more talent in some spots, significantly more talent than A&M. And so the fact that they were in the game, and it was in College Station, that's coaching. All I will tell you is that every quarterback that he coaches, he gets as much out of them as anybody. Christian Ponder and E.J. Manuel, how those guys were ever first-round picks, I certainly didn't have them graded that way. The production was very good. I like Jimbo. We've had our run-ins. I can remember publicly, and maybe I shouldn't have done it because it maybe came across as mean. I didn't mean it. I was just being honest. But when Jamarcus Russell came out of LSU, who Jimbo coached, I was very critical. And being an LSU guy and an LSU grad and a former LSU assistant, and I was asked an honest question, and I gave an honest answer, said, I don't think Jamarcus is going to make it in the NFL. I know he's going to get drafted high, maybe number one, but he had very average capacity to learn and very low willingness to learn. And, of course, the guy that wrote the article, and it went even national in USA Today, it had me saying, you know, I don't think Jamarcus is going to make it, and Jimbo saying, oh, that's ridiculous. He's going to be an all-pro quarterback in the NFL, and he's going to be great and all that. And it wasn't this way with me and Jimbo, but the reporter made it sound like it was Jimbo against me, and it wasn't. It's my opinion versus his. He coached him, and he took up for him, and I respect that. I just had a different view of him as whether he was going to make it. I knew that he was going to get drafted high, and I knew why, but I didn't think he was going to make it. And I told Al Davis and Bruce Kebrick that. Bruce Kebrick was the head scout for the Raiders and was the guy that scouted in the area. They loved Jamarcus, and I told them, if you go down that path, you're going to regret it. I'm just going to tell you. And I've got my, you know, ones that I've got wrong too. But I knew the kid very well. And so, I don't agree with everything that Jimbo says and does. I'm going to tell you, the guy coaches quarterbacks hard, and he coaches them well. I'll give you an opinion that maybe means a little bit more than mine. How about Nick Saban? Nick Saban thinks he's the best quarterback coach and offensive play caller that he's ever had or coached against, ever.
That's pretty good endorsement.
Accounts for something. That's pretty good endorsement. So I know this, that if Nick Saban could have anybody coaching his offense, and it would just be anybody, and I mean, it's never going to happen because Jimbo's moved on from that, but Jimbo Fisher, he was his by far favorite offensive coordinator. Coached guys like he wanted them to, coached them hard, got everything out of them. I think Jimbo's a great coach. Again, I don't agree with everything. I think the guy's done a tremendous job. We know things ended poorly at Florida State. He contributed to, you know, a lot. He let the frustration of that administration get to him, and I think he let go of the rope, and there's no doubt about that. But I think as a head coach, I think as a developer of quarterbacks, I mean, you got something there, because now you know that offense is going to be well coached, and I think the recruiting, he's recruited, proven to be a good recruiter, and he's in a fertile situation with all the resources that he didn't have at Florida State. This is the best situation A&M's ever been in. They've always had money. They've never had the right guy. I think they've got the right guy. But I got to tell you, I mean, you think they got a chance to beat Clemson? I don't. Think they got a chance to beat Georgia? I don't. You think they got a chance to beat Alabama? I don't. I don't think they're within 10 points, 14 points of those teams personnel-wise. And I know that Auburn and LSU are more talented. So I'd say they're 0-5 in terms of personnel. Now, whether they win one or two of those games, I don't know. I think it's maybe as tough a schedule as there is. So I think 5 years from now, 3 years from now even, if the program can't compete with those programs, well, that's more on him. Right now, I think there's a talent gap that he's trying to fix.
Chris, tell everybody about LandryFootball.com and how they can get
it. Bill, it's great, easy. Go to LandryFootball.com. We're really excited about a lot of things we've got going on. We've got Big Ten and SEC Podcast Daily. I am going to start up on LandryFootball.com soon. We're working out the details. We're going to have a Big 12, a Pac-12, and an ACC for those fans there. We keep everything covered. On LandryFootball.com, we cover everybody. So we not only have podcasts that you can get for free, but we've got daily notebooks on the college and NFL game. When we bring a lot of film room nuggets in there, recruiting, as you know, Bill, is huge in the month of June. It has taken 90% of the news in our college football notebooks because of prospect camps and offers and commitments. It is just a big-time month for that. So we got a lot of that in our notebooks around the NFL. But we're breaking down rosters in college football and the NFL. So I think it's a great resource for people to get updated on what's going on around the college and NFL game, learn a little bit about how the process works from a coaching and scouting standpoint. It's one-stop shopping football, and a lot of it's free. Some of it's membership-based. We think it's very, very reasonable. It's less than a magazine subscription. And if you take advantage of our scouting season sale this time of year, you get it even at a greater discounted price. You not only get what's going on this time of year, which it is football season for us because we're breaking down the rosters, and if you don't get on it late, it's going to be too late to be able to absorb all the information prior to the season. But it's going to be there, breakdowns of the games during the season, recruiting, the draft next year, all the way through next year at this time. So take advantage of our year membership, which is, I'll tell you exactly what it is, it's $49 with a discount for an entire year. So we think it's a great opportunity. You can try it for a month, 3 months, whatever you want. We think you'll love it. Follow us at Landry Football for all the latest information on Twitter.
Chris, see you next week, bud.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you.